is directly spiritual vibration coming from Goloka. And if we just chant the holy name and follow that name, we will end up in the spiritual world. It may take, it's a journey, it's a flight, a long flight. It could take one lifetime. It could take, it could even during this lifetime, before that. It's like many great souls who, after just a, like Srila Prabhupada said, it took him 35 years to perfect his chanting. Then he was seeing Krishna every day. I see, one of my god sisters asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, have you seen Krishna? Prabhupada said, yes. And she said, really? Every day, all the time he's seeing Krishna. Because he perfected his chanting. It's like so if you follow, you just follow that sound. It will pull you. Because we're all asleep. We're in totally enamored. This material world is Maya. A lot of people here work in computers. Who doesn't work in computers? Okay. So this material world is like a virtual reality. It is a virtual. A virtual reality is the best metaphor you can get. It appears to be real. It has all its own laws. It's like if you could set up a virtual reality machine, and if you were living inside of it, it would all follow all the natural laws. And you would think, how can you say this is not real? If you drop a ball, it falls. But actually, it's not real. It's all computer generated. Right? I've seen elaborate virtual reality. I just saw an advertisement for the new Sony PlayStation. You put a visor over your head, completely surround, and the guy was just reviewing it. And when he looked inside, he was underwater. And he's talking about what he sees. And all of a sudden, then he starts screaming because a shark was attacking him. So imagine if you were born with one of those things over your head. You would think that what you're seeing is real. But he just put it on and he thought what he was seeing was real. it scared the life out of him. He was terrified what he said because it was so real. He started shouting, startled. But this material world is a virtual reality which we've been injected into. Everything, all this energy, everything we see here, all is all Krishna's energy. Our body, this cloth, the house, the air we're breathing, it's all Krishna's energy. And he's working everything, like the big super user in the operating system. And he's created this whole illusion. To get out of it, we have to chant the holy name. Like when we were asleep. When we're asleep, somebody wake you up? Do they tickle your feet? Do they put incense in front of your nose? You have an alarm bell. Or somebody calls your name. And then gradually you wake up, and then you see where you are. What's that holy name? Krishna's calling you. And by serving Krishna, he doesn't get any benefit. What benefit does Krishna need? He's already in ecstasy. Krishna's already in. He's not deriving any benefit by our devotional service. He doesn't need us. We need him. By serving Krishna, we get benefit. He doesn't get benefit. He may appreciate it, as Krishna says in the Gita. He's completely full. He doesn't require us. But he says in 9:29, I just read that, yeah. He says, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. That's how you become friends. He has become friends with Krishna. Because we were envious of Krishna before. That's why we were in the material world. We became envious. Because we were either in the, we could see the spiritual world, we could see everything that was there, and we liked it. People didn't leave the spiritual world because they didn't like the spiritual world. They didn't like the fact that it's always beautiful and that it's eternal and that every step is a dance and every song is a word. They didn't like that. That didn't bother them. Everybody liked that part. You're eternally youthful. You never get any disease. You know, that's everybody liked that part. But what they didn't like is the fact that why this person is in the center? Why he should be in the center? I should be in this. You know, that thought comes in. And Krishna, he knows everything. He immediately understands. Okay. So you want to be in the center. Okay, we can make an arrangement. But you can't do that here. Because, you know, there can only be one guy. And that's me. Position is already taken. So I'll make an arrangement. I make a special place for you. You can go there. And you can be the center. You can be the controller. There's only one problem. Everybody else thinks the same way. Everybody else there thinks the same, that they're also the center, that they're also the controller. And so therefore there's clashes. That's why if when we get rid of that mood, then only we can go back to the spiritual world, because otherwise we'll ruin the mood. Right? Like, so whether somebody walks into this house didn't take the shoes off. Right, they would ruin the mood, right? Instead of smoking a cigarette, you wouldn't appreciate it. It ruins the whole mood. So if we show up in the spiritual world, it's going to ruin the mood. Unless we get trained. We have to get retrained. We have to get re-educated. We have to become cured from our insanity, because we're mentally ill. We think we're God. That's a mental illness. We can't, because we're not God. We're tiny, tiny, little, insignificant creatures. You know? I realized how insignificant I was when I woke up, regained consciousness on the side of a highway in Mathura in 2007. I was, car accident, When I woke up on the side of the highway with 12 broken bones and complete pain, I realized how totally insignificant I am. So we're all insignificant. So to think that we are Krishna, then this is complete insanity. We can never become Krishna. Only Krishna is Krishna. So we have to be cured of this disease. And why Mayavad? I was just thinking of this a few days ago. Why this impersonal conception of Mayavad is there? Because that way you don't have to think of a person bigger than you. If you have to think that there's a supreme personality of God, that means that person is bigger than I am. But if it's just impersonal, well, I can be, But when you have to think of a supreme person, that means you have to think that there is somebody who is much bigger than I am. And that is something we don't want to think of, because we think that we are that person. So this chanting of the holy name with, just like if you do any experiment, or just like if you do any cooking, there are certain protocols, right? So like if you make pakoras, and instead of putting salt, you put sugar in the batter, then it's not going to work so good. Or if you make a cake, like I remember one time, Janmashtami, 1986, one Mataji, she made sandesh with salt instead of sugar. Yeah, like, 2 cups of salt. I took one bite, and because salt is an emetic. Emetic means it forces you to throw up. If you take some poison, you just put a lot of salt in water, drink that, you immediately throw up. So that's everybody like, because they made a mistake. So that's a protocol. There are certain protocols that you have to do if you want to have a successful experiment. So spiritual life is also an experiment. And the laboratory is in your heart. So if you do the experiment properly, then you get the result everybody else got. Like Krishna says in the 3rd chapter of the Gita, that this system has been followed by many other people. like Janaka Maharaj, many, many people, they followed this process and they got the result. It's like, so if everybody else, when they followed the recipe, they got the result, and if you didn't get the result, that means who's wrong? Them or you? You did something wrong. You have to go back and check. For there's protocol. You chant the whole hand, but there's also certain protocols. You know, the 10 offenses, you have to avoid the 10 offenses. You know, there's a certain things which support that. Then you get the result. Otherwise, you know, if you mess up, like if you put salt instead of sugar, it looks the same, but it's not the same. You won't get the same result. So that's why, you know, it takes some time. You have to, we may make mistakes along the way. But sure, if you just keep doing it, you'll get the result. As long as you keep trying. Otherwise, if you don't make endeavors in spiritual life, do you still want to be here 10 million lifetimes from now? Actually, that's nothing, 10 million lifetimes. Because as explained in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, anyway, it says, Brahmande Brahmite, coined the Bhagavan Jiv, Guru Krishna Prasadipai Bhakti Lata Bija, that the living entity is going from one Brahmanda to the next Brahmanda. Brahmanda is the lifetime of Lord Brahma, which is 311 trillion and 40 billion years. Now, just to get an idea of what that means, that's 311 trillion and 40 billion human years. So if we, just to get an idea, 100 years per lifetime, that would be 3.1 trillion lifetimes to go from one Brahmanda to the next Brahmanda. And we've gone through many Brahmandas. That's an average. Nobody lives 100 years. Very few people. And see, what if you get a birth as a dog? What if you get a birth as a chipmunk? That means it's going to be even less. So the main thing is it's a long, long, many, many, many lifetimes. So we don't make progress in spiritual life now. That's what the result is going to be. We misuse this human life. Suppose I gave you suppose you have a son, a child, right? And you have a handheld calculator, and you have a smartphone, and you have like a workstation, right? So the handheld calculator, you could just do addition and subtraction. So what if he just uses that super workstation just to use the calculator mode on there? Now, the calculator costs, you know, £3, but the workstation costs £3,000. So what are you going to do? Are you going to, you know, you just take that big machine, you might just give him the calculator, right? So if you're only using your human life to do things animals do, then what's going to happen? This very fancy mechanism will be taken away from you. You're not using it to the full potential, like a child. Like an employee using a big fancy computer just to do addition and subtraction. You don't need that. You can do that with your fingers. So the boss is going to take it away from you. Give it to somebody who'll use it right. So the boss will take away this human body and give you a cockroach body instead. That's all you're going to do. Don't waste your time. Don't lose this opportunity. 8,400,000 species of life. And as Srila Prabhupada said, this human life is like the escalator. One is going up and the other one is going down. You make a choice. The human life. I just took a lot of escalators today. So I just heard several lectures by Srila Prabhupada. And that's another thing you should do, is that some people, you know, Srila Prabhupada is the Shiksha Guru for everybody in ISKCON. You only have Diksha Gurus. But Srila Prabhupada is everybody's Shiksha Guru. That means you should all be taking Shiksha from Srila Prabhupada. And you will develop very strong love and attachment from him. Well, somebody might say, well, how is that possible? Srila Prabhupada left in 1977. How is it? Everybody know who Rukmini is? Rukmini Devi, the wife of Krishna. How is it that Rukmini Devi fell in love with Krishna, wanted to marry him, even though she was engaged to somebody else?
Because he heard from Madhumani.
She never met Krishna. She never saw Krishna, never spoke to Krishna. But she just heard about Krishna from so many different rishis, from Narada Muni, different rishis. So if you, every day, not just listen to, not just read Prabhupada's books, that's one thing to get attention, but if you listen every day to Prabhupada's lectures and his room conversations, you will develop very strong love and attachment to Srila Prabhupada. You'll dream about Prabhupada. You'll think, you know, you'll be inspired. Prabhupada is a pure devotee of Krishna. I'm just, you know, I'm listening all the time. I have it in my bags. You know, it's a small little Logitech boom box. A little thing they make it. The next neighbors can hear it. And a cheap MP3 player, and I can hear lectures continuously. I hear two or three every day. So Srila, I just remember one conversation where Harishari was saying that, you know, if your books, nobody would believe it. It just sounds like it would just be theory. Who would believe this? But because we see you personally doing everything that's in those books, you know, that you are a pure devotee. And Prabhupada is, you know, he came at the age of 70. He would sleep 4 hours a day, maximum, from 11 o'clock at night to 1 o'clock in the morning, and then 2 hours in the afternoon. He published, on average, one book every month, unheard of in history. Plus, he created over 100 centers, thousands of disciples, you know, so many things, and traveled around the world 12 times. Do all that while he's traveling around the world 12 times. Because of his pure, unalloyed devotion to Krishna. Now that's what inspired all his disciples. They saw that. So you can also get that same inspiration if you just listen, or you associate with Srila Prabhupada by listening to his conversations, lectures. You will hear the, as a, one time I was moving, so it was a deadline. I had to leave the place. So as it started getting closer and closer, what is this here?
Mine.
Okay. Oh, yeah, as a microphone. I started getting closer and closer to the deadline. I didn't have time to chant my japa. You know, so I was just getting up, packing, eating, sleeping, packing. That was all. But I was listening to lectures, 12, 15 a day. And I was wondering, you know, why do I feel so good? Why am I feeling so good? I don't know, if I don't chant my japa, I feel terrible. Just at that very second, as I said, why am I feeling so good? I haven't chanted my rounds in, you know, days. At that very second, Prabhupada said, because the words of the Guru is Krishna speaking to you. So it's mystical. Even the, you know, the tapes, they're mystical. You know, it's one morning walk. They asked Prabhupada, what does it mean, separated energy? And Krishna says in the Gita, it's my separated energy. So they had two tape recorders taping, and says, he says, stop. Okay. Hit this tape, rewind it. Now play it. And you can hear it. Then you can hear Prabhupada listening to his own conversations. That is my separated energy. This is separated energy. This is Prabhupada. Listen to these conversations. It's recordings. You're listening to Srila Prabhupada. You will get the one. There's one boy from Punjab. He wanted to be my student. So, astrology student. So I wouldn't take anybody who hasn't read all of Prabhupada's books and listened to all his recordings. That's the first prerequisite. That's just the prerequisite. Doesn't mean I'll accept him. That's a prerequisite. And he's done. So he's married, got two kids, lives with his parents, and he's the only devotee in the house. The rest are not devotees. Everybody else, you know, and he's working. Plus, he's going to school. But he wanted, so he was very determined. So he listened, he started reading all of Prabhupada's books and listening. And he started, you know, started, like, says, it's, I'm writing to you at 1 o'clock in the morning, I've read it, and then feeling, you know, like, he's just feeling an ecstasy. He's dreaming about Srila Prabhupada. Because he was continuously, he was finding the time to do it. And despite of the fact he had a very, very busy day. A very busy day. With, you know, two kids, a wife, a brother, you know, they're all, and the brother and his wife and kids and parents all living in the same house and fighting. Each other, fighting with his wife, fighting with his brother, fighting with his parents, fighting at work. But he was reading, and he was falling in love with Srila Prabhupada, dreaming about him. Then he realized, you know, then he realized that it's more important to be a pure devotee than it is to be an astrologer. Like that. You know. So the point being is, if you seriously read Prabhupada's books, but specifically listen to his recordings, you will develop a very strong, positive relationship with Srila Prabhupada, because he's a very wonderful, a very lovable person with a tremendous sense of humor. That's why he charmed all his disciples. They just fell in love with him. He's a very charming person. And you can just tell by the way he is. Somebody says, yeah, somebody asks Prabhupada, says, yeah. It's one thing when you read it, another thing when you hear the way he intoned, how he explained, for example, the Leela of Sakshi Gopal. Right? So the Brahmin had to come back from Orisha to Vrindavan to convince. So you have to come as my witness. And Gopal said, what do you mean? How can I go walk all the way over there? How can I walk over there, you know? I'm a murti, says. And the boy says, well, if you can talk, you can walk. And this way, he was defeated by logic. But such a charming way he explained the whole thing. And you keep hearing Srila Prabhupada, then you develop a very strong attachment for Srila Prabhupada. The same way Rukmini, just about hearing about Krishna, develop a very strong desire to be devoted, you know, to be with Krishna. But when you actually directly hear Srila Prabhupada, imagine if they had the recordings of Ramanujacharya, or recordings of Jesus Christ or Muhammad, the direct words, with it, you know. So we have Srila Prabhupada. Take advantage of it. Who here listens to lectures of Srila Prabhupada?
But not every day.
Daily. As soon as I get up, I put it on. I make my bed up. You know, I brush my teeth. Then I take a bath. I come back. Put it back on, get dressed, and it's mobile. Yeah, I just bring it in to take prasadam. You can hear, and because I was in a, I do asanas every day because I was in a car accident, so I have to. So I listen. That goes for 45 minutes. So I hear another lecture. So that means I hear 2-3 a day. I mean, like when I take a prasadam, I listen. Or when I anything that doesn't require any brain work, I listen. If you're cooking, eating, you can hear at least 2-3. Before when there was now it's MP3, before when there was on tapes, and then it would cost $2,000 for the whole set. I had a tape recorder in every room. As soon as I walked into that room, I would press the button. Of course, it would not be a different lecture, but, you know, there was still, sugar is sweet no matter where you taste it, you know? So I would be hearing, and I've listened several times. 4 or 5 times the whole set. And now it costs nothing. You get it for free. Then it costs $2,000. You get everything. And now they just came out with more. Like I'm listening now to May 1976. Previously there was only 6 recordings for May of 1976. Now there's 60 recordings for May 1976. So many new things. Srila Prabhupada is stressing quality. Not quantity, quality of disciples, not the quantity. Purity. Purity is the force, not quantity. Right? Purity is the force. Because, you see, the purity, because of Srila Prabhupada's purity, one man did so much because of purity. Like the Duke of Wellington said about Napoleon. Napoleon's presence on the battlefield lies like the addition of 30,000 extra men. So Srila Prabhupada, one man, because of his purity, he was able to do so much. And he said, Bhakti Siddhanta, his Guru Maharaj says, I have done so much just to try to get one. I'm just trying to find one sincere disciple. 64 Gaudiya Math established, just trying to find one person. So the quality is important, not the quantity. Quantity, in the military, having a quantity of untrained people is a liability. Better to have a few people who know what they're doing than masses who don't know what they're doing. Because Srila Prabhupada was that. The full moon is better than thousands of stars. You just need one full moon. So we have to stress on that. Not that we... Of course, somebody might say, a large number of very qualified people, but that's not so easy to do. And then it becomes... The tendency is always to lower the bar, to try to get the numbers up. But it's not... No, it's the quality. It's the quality which is more important. Because they influence everybody else. They influence everybody else. You know, that's what Krishna says in Yad Charat. He says that what great men do, that others emulate. It means there's only a few great men, but others emulate them. So therefore the effect is there. So that it's like the one light lights up the whole room. So if you have just a few people who are very powerful, then they influence everybody else. But if you have a lot of people who are not, then they'll have bad habits. They'll also influence by people. They'll do things wrong. They'll develop a bad reputation for your organization. So better to have a few very qualified devotees, and they'll have a very strong impact on the rest of society. Several times Srila Prabhupada said, you don't have to, not everybody's going to become a devotee. But if even 1%, then they'll influence the rest. They'll influence the rest of the rest of society. How many people have seen that movie, The Matrix? Anybody else? The movie, The Matrix? Have you seen that movie?
Yeah.
Matrix, okay. The major plot line of that movie is, as we said, that we're not the body, it's a virtual reality. The people who wrote that movie, the directors, producers, the Warkowski brothers, their parents were atheists. But being good American teenagers, they rebelled against their parents, and in secret they were reading the Bhagavad Gita. That's where that concept came from. You're not the body; it's an illusion. So the point I'm making is because of Srila Prabhupada, that's affected the whole culture. People have said the red pill and the blue pill. The red pill and blue pill. And they've also published another movie called Sky Atlas, about six incarnations of a person, how he reincarnates six times, because they're influenced by Srila Prabhupada's book. That's the influence of one person, Srila Prabhupada, because of his purity. So it has a cultural impact on other people. So better to have just a few. Like the U.S. Marines, there's four armed services in the American military. The Air Force, the Navy, the Army, and the Marines. The Marines is the smallest unit. The other groups are having difficulty getting members to come. But the Marines people are lining up to get in because they have the highest standard. And their motto is... Well, there's the. We just want a few good men. They're not interested in quantity. They just want a few good men, and people are lining up to try to get in. whereas the other services, nobody wants to go because they have such high standards. So if we have high standards, then it's better for our preaching. Then the holy name will be pure. Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that Lord Chaitanya sent Bhakti Siddhanta to see. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was too old. Jagannath wanted him to perform a mission. He said, "I'm too old. You have to send your secretary." So he sent Bhakti Siddhanta with two missions: establishing Daivi Varnasha and the pure chanting of the holy name. Because if there's no Daivi Varnasha, then the chanting, because shortly after Lord Chaitanya left, everything became corrupted. Chanting was there, but it became corrupted because people, their morals, it became, at the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, say in the late 19th century, if you wanted to insult somebody in Bengal, you called them a Vaishnava. It was such a degraded, not like in South India where the Vaishnavas were, because they followed Daivi Varnashram in South India. But in Bengal they weren't following. It became very degraded. All kind of debauchery. So you want to insult somebody, you call them Vaishnav. So Bhakti Siddhanta and Bhakti Vinod Thakur, they struggled very hard to change that. And one of the points was by re-establishing Daivi Varnashram, which kept, you know, moral principles. And that gives for pure chanting of the holy name. So that's the whole thing. We have to chant the holy name purely. And then we'll make progress, and everybody else also will make progress. But we have to start with ourselves first. Start with ourselves first. So, any questions?
One second. I'm thinking because we are already waiting from 2 o'clock, right? So I don't think so we can have seminars. Today we can have seminar next week. So what we can do, we had a wonderful talk on Prabhupada and pure chanting. And we can take some questions, can do some kirtan and take prasada. Yes. And we can have seminar next Sunday. Yes. So we can take questions now.
Okay. What is your name, Prabhu?
My name is Durga.
Huh?
Durga.
Durga Das.
I'm not initiated yet. That is the name given when I was born.
Were you from Nepal?
Nepal, yes.
Yeah, good job.
And please allow me to say something.
Okay.
Some of us who don't know a little bit, I would like to say this because it's strong urgency. Mm-hmm. When you decided to come to London with 5 other devotees...
No. That's Prabhupada had 5 disciples named Shyama Sundar. Okay. 2 immediately blooped. One is an Indian who lives on the other side of Surp Ganj, and the other one you're talking about is my older god brother. In fact, when I got initiated, and I met Achyutananda Swami, and he asked me what my name was. I said, Shyama Sundar. And he said, "Oh, that means the other Shyama Sundar is finished." And I said, "Other Shyama Sundar? What other Shyama Sundar?" I had not another Shyama Sundar. I was like, very disappointed. But Prabhupada, he had 3 disciples named Sulochan, 2 of whom were married to each other. Sulochan Das married to Sulochan Dasi. You know, so there was not, I'm not that Shyama Sundar that you're thinking of. Who was the friend of George Harrison.
Yes.
So,
the crowd is near crowd. We talk about mild things.
Yeah. Just one thing. Uh-huh. How important is, because you nicely gave importance of chanting, for pure chanting is devotional service and pure chanting, like performing some devotional service and pure chanting, will it help?
Chanting is devotional service.
Yes.
It is devotional service. There's the 9 processes of devotional service as explained by Sri Prahlad Maharaj. Of course, next week, or very soon, it'll be Nrisimha Chaturthi. 9 processes are Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. So Shravanam, Kirtanam, we are in the Bhagavat Parampara. There's 4 bona fide paramparas. The Sri Sampradaya, Brahma Sampradaya, Vishnu Rudra Sampradaya and Kumara Sampradaya. So the Sri Sampradaya, and I can't remember which it's, I think it's the Kumara Sampradaya or Vishnu Sampradaya. I think those are Pancharatrik Sampradayas. And we, the Brahma Sampradaya and the other Sampradaya are Bhagavat Sampradayas. We also do Pancharatra, and they also do Bhagavat, but the proportion is different. We're like 75%. So, I mean, Bhagavat means our focus is on the holy name. Pancharatra means more on the deity worship. Both are together. But our focus is on Bhagavat, on the holy name. Whereas you go to Sri Rangam, there's mostly on puja. Like that. So, but the point being is that chanting the holy name is devotional service. It's not separate. It is devotional service. It is the main devotional service. There was... Prabhupada had one disciple, had one godbrother named Akinchana Das Krishnadas Babaji. I met him. And it was in Calcutta. I met him in 1980. He had just arrived at the temple. And we were just about to take, I think it must have been breakfast. And so they immediately gave him the VIP treatment, and they brought him to Prabhupada's room, you know, and they brought all the trays of Mahaprasadam in there, you know. And after a few minutes, he walked out of there, and he came and he sort of like laughing and Hare Krishna laughing, and he sort of like squeezed himself in between two brahmacharis. He says he didn't want to eat alone. He didn't like the VIP. He wanted to eat with other devotees. So the story with him is that he's always chanting. So when he first joined the Gaudiya Math, all the temple managers were complaining about him. This man doesn't want to do anything. All he wants to do is chant. He won't peel potatoes. He won't sweep the floor. He won't do anything. He only is chant. So they wrote letters to Bhakti Siddhanta complaining about this man. He won't do anything. You know, what are we going to do about this? Bhakti Siddhanta says, what? This is very good. We want more men like this. he sent a letter to all the Gaudiya Math centers. You put an ad in the paper that we will give free room and board to anyone who chants Hare Krishna 24 hours a day. Free room and board. So a few people took it up, but after 2 or 3 weeks, they stopped. But he kept doing. Then they understood. So he was only just chanting Hare Krishna all the time. Non-stop. So that is devotional service. That's devotional service. Chanting the holy name. That's what we want to do. Takes us out of this material world into the spiritual. He was always happy. He was always happy. He was always laughing because he was happy. Because the holy name is Krishna. You're always in connection with Krishna. The holy name is directly Krishna. So if you're always chanting the holy name, even in your sleep, you should chant in your sleep. Do you do that? You should chant in your sleep also. I'm not kidding. You should do that in your sleep. Right? Chant in your sleep. Or are you going to dream about some beautiful woman or something? Or, you know, get my new washing machine. Or, you know, that's what happens. The things come into our mind. So we should chant. Dreams are real. But they're not shared realities. But they are real. Because they're created by Krishna. So you should also chant. In your dreams.
Are there any tips so that we can to be able to chant while sleeping?
Just as soon as you realize you're not chanting, you should just start chanting. As soon as you realize you're not thinking about Krishna, that's when you should chant, even in your sleep. But just do it in your waking first. Do it in waking first. Then worry about that second.
Anybody have
other
questions? I have some questions. If you have, please,
Kadian,
I'll put my question as.
My name is Partha Govinda.
Partha Govinda. Okay.
I have a question. So many years of devotional service you're performing. So, what is the reality check to understand we are really progressing in the spiritual devotional life? I mean, externals, we could show a lot of things. But internally, what is the barometer that we can check that we are really progressing?
Well, two things I want to say. First of all, okay, I joined in 76, so that's like, 38 years ago. So that's nothing. Bahu janmanam ante gnanavan man prapadyate vasudevam sarvamiti samahamasudulam. It's a multi-lifetime process. So 38 years, it's nothing. It's a continuing process. Obviously, I didn't succeed in my last life, otherwise I wouldn't be here. So, we have to make some progress. But even if we only make 1% per year, per lifetime, even if you only make 1% progress in each lifetime, it's only 100 lifetimes. Right? So somebody maybe, it's his first lifetime, could be their 10th lifetime, it could be their 100th lifetime. Or some people can make complete perfection one lifetime, if they're really pushing it, pedal to the metal. But some persons maybe, they're still very deeply asleep and they're only just starting to wake up. So it just depends on each individual person. So just wanted to clarify that, 30 years of being a devotee, look at them, 40, look at him, he's still doing that. Well, what's 40 years? What's 40 years in eternity? 311 trillion years, human years of the lifetime of Lord Brahma. And that's just the inhalation and exhalation of Mahavishnu. It's nothing. It's just like a bubble. It's like a 1 second of Lord Brahma is 100,000 years for us. That's like a fraction of a second for Lord Brahma. So we have to keep things in perspective, about this time of somebody's been practicing for so long and look, he fell down or this or that. Or how much progress are they making? And it just depends upon your sincerity. Tivrena bhakti yogena, Krishna says, that one should practice with intensity. And that's, you have to do it very intensely. With great determination. One-pointedness. Ekanta. And then you'll make some progress. You can make it very quickly. Or if you are sightseeing in the material world, it might take a lot longer, A lot longer when we become... So what was the second part of your question?
How can we actually check while we are...
When you're happy.
You have to be happy,
Because we are just struggling with a lot of...
Brahma Bhuta Prasanna... Brahma Bhuta Prasanna... Nasochati Nakangsi Samasarvesha Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Lapate Param. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. Always happy. Their only sadness is, Prahlad said, my only worry is for those who are suffering, others who are suffering. Or if their anxiety for Krishna. But for themselves, they're always happy. That's a barometer. See, Prabhupada's only worries was because, he was his mission, he didn't want it to get perverted, he didn't want it to get, because he had a, but for himself, if he just, his only anxiety was fulfilling the mission of his guru. That was his only anxiety, that it didn't get thwarted. Because he wasn't just doing it for himself, he was trying to fulfill the mission of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So that was his anxiety. But that's Krishna anxiety, that's spiritual. I heard him, that's a whole discussion with him, because I was listening while I was ironing my dhotis. So that spiritual anxiety, that's Krishna anxiety. We were thinking about Krishna then, that we have to do this for Krishna. Otherwise, somebody's like, there's like Babaji's, Goshtinandas, so those who are just doing their own sadhana and not doing preaching, and then it's, but they're not trying to benefit other people. Bhajanandis and Goshtinandis, so preachers, they have to come down from the Maha Bhagavat level to the lower level so they can preach to other people. Otherwise, they just see everybody's a devotee. But to come to the medium level, you have to then identify four classes of people. God, the devotees, the innocent, and the asuras. We worship God, we make friends with the devotees, and we're merciful to the innocent, and we avoid the asuras. You have to make a distinction like that. So the a detachment from material things, and the main one, you know, the sense gratification, like Yamunacharya, who was had been a great king, and he had many wives, but he became a great devotee of Ranganath. So now, when he remembers back on, you know, his various relationships with all his wives, he spits at the thought. You know, he was a past master in Kama Shastra, but now that is something distressing to him in comparison. It's not that in Vedic culture they didn't know about sex. After Pandu died, because he was cursed, and then he embraced Madri, and she was fighting, you know, but then, and he died, he had been cursed. So, when Madri came and expressed to Kunti what happened, so Kunti, what did she say? At least you saw her husband with a smile on his face for once. At least before he was always glum because he could never approach any of his wives, because that would be, he would die immediately if he had a discharge. So at least you saw our husband with a smile on his face. So I mean, they understood that there is, you know, pleasure in sex. But unlike Western society, who think that's the end, it doesn't go further than that, there's higher pleasures. You know, higher experiences of ecstasy, which so high that it makes that look, it becomes disgusting. So when we become detached from any sensual pleasures, that's also a barometer. We become detached from these things because we're experiencing a higher taste. That takes a while because we've been so habituated to living in this virtual reality and thinking it's real. You know, we're born with the visor on our face. I was just reading in the Mahapurana that in waking state, our consciousness is in our eyes. And when we're in dream state, the consciousness is in our throat. And in susupti, in deep sleep, it's in our heart. So that means when you are awake, it means you're focusing, looking out. You're in that virtual reality, thinking that this is the real world, and that I'm going to enjoy it. I'm playing in the game.
I have two questions. I'll keep it personal because it's a different question. But here we have all the newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
So when you spoke about a very strong and heavy philosophy, for example, that is very important and things like that. How can they progress? Because different background, families, commitments, job and work we have. Of course, we can't avoid it. So how can they can relate to this Krishna consciousness? Any thing you want to say about that?
I didn't understand the question.
So here, many people are coming from different situations, families, mm-hmm. children's, mm-hmm. job, everything. Mm-hmm. So they cannot straight away go to the top level and 16 rounds or 24 hours chanting like that. But they are very beginners. So how they can also make some progress in what way?
There's only one. You have to have desire.
How to develop the desire?
Become, you know, wisdom comes from suffering. That's the material world is designed that way,
mm-hmm.
right? Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It is, the material world is perfectly imperfect. Krishna designed it this way. It's a hospital. It's a correctional institution. His name is Durga, right? So this is, material world is Durga. It's a fort. It's a prison. So tell me, the prisons when you go in, whether they assign every inmate, you know, everybody gets 12 beautiful members of the opposite sex to take care of them, and you get custom chefs that cooks for you, and you get massages, and that the way prison? No, it's miserable. The prisons are not nice, right? They're purposely built that way so that people don't want to stay there. It's the reformatory process. So when you get fed up and you want to get out, then you become serious. Otherwise, you stay. You have to desire to get out. Not that you go from one cell to the next cell. You want to get out of the prison. So when you get fed up, get sick and tired of the place, then you do what it takes to get out, isn't it? And that, you have to have the design, you have to get the divine discontent that you just don't want to be here anymore. Otherwise, how are you going to get up? If you think it's nice, like I was reading a, you know, these are Somali pirates, right? You might have been heard in the news. So there was these Somali pirates that got captured. They were being tried in The Hague, in Netherlands. So they were in jail. But they didn't want to leave. The jails were so nice compared to Somalia. They wrote a petition that we want to take asylum and stay in Dutch prison. So they didn't want to leave the jails. They thought it was so nice. So the Dutch were so upset. They felt insulted. So they said that they should be transferred to Kenya and fill their sentences out in Kenyan jail. You know. So how are you going to leave a prison if you think it's nice? People think it's a nice place to enjoy. Then you won't want to leave.
It's very, people are here very comfortable. They have their own timings, eatings, and cars. So attached to these things.
But it's a struggle.
Yes.
It becomes a struggle. It's a struggle in material. When they realize it, it's a struggle. You know, so many things. It appears that way, but everybody's suffering. Like I said in the car. That's one of the things I learned as an astrologer, is that everybody suffers. They all come to me when they're suffering. Like if you're a doctor, people only come to see you when they're sick. Mm-hmm. No matter how, and they're from all classes of life. And you learn, everybody is suffering. So I get, you know, as I said, I was doing the horoscope of the former Prime Minister of India, and he was just complaining about his life. The most powerful man of India, and his life had been miserable. He just was complaining and complaining. So then I, vicariously, I could understand that this is a miserable place. Of course, my own personal experience plus that when you desire that, you're just tired of the suffering, then you do something. Like if you get sick, sometimes you get sick, but the treatment to cure your disease is not so good, painful. But when you get fed up with being sick, then you'll do whatever it takes to get better. Right? I had this once. I got back in 1980, 81, I had sinusitis, very bad. But I got so fed up with having the sinusitis, I was taking all these, you know, acrid Ayurvedic oils and sticking them in my nose. It's terrible, you wouldn't do. But because the disease was so unpleasant, I was doing these things to get rid of it. So when you get fed up with your condition, then you do what it takes. Otherwise, you stay. It's up to you. Not up to somebody else. And Krishna will, he'll arrange. Dukkalaya Mashashvata. It's a temporary place full of misery. So it's insane to think that we're going to be happy here. Because it's designed to be unhappy. You'll never be happy here. Because by design, who's except the Somali pirates? They thought they were going to be happy in a Dutch prison. But they were kicked out. That's like Swarga. Swarga, you know, like a Dutch prison, like a Swarga, you know, for a Somali. So Swarga is just the Dutch prison of the material world. It's a temporary place. You think we can enjoy there, but they're all suffering. In fact, it's worse because it appears to be bringing us the thousands of times more sense gratification. There's one section of the Mahabharata, Mudgala Rishi. So the Vimana came from Swargaloka to take him to Swarga. So he asked before he got on the Vimana, he said to the I think it was I can't remember the name. I think it was Indra's charioteer, whose name I can't remember right now. Anyway, he asked him, so tell me, before you take me to Swarga, tell me of the defects of Swarga. And he said, nobody ever asked me a question like that. That's a very foolish. Now, why are you even thinking about defects of Swarga? But since you've asked me, there is one defect. There are a few defects. That when you're enjoying like anything, but then when all your punya wears out, just before you die, your garland wilts, and then you have panic attack. This, because you know you're going to die, and you're going to come back to Mrityuloka, says this is a very big defect. So then Murugala Rishi says, oh, you tell me that place where there is no defects. And he began to explain to him about Vaikuntha. So then I said, okay, then you can go. I'm not going with you. I'm not going to take your... And then he waited for the Vaikuntha Vimana to come. Because he didn't want to go to that temporary place. Because it is temporary. Even if it's, you know, 1 year for them is 10,000 years for us, so what? It's just temporary. It doesn't last. Time will go. And then you're back to where you were before. All that hard work for nothing. Like these Olympic athletes, right? They work so hard for many years, and then they get 15 minutes of glory, and that's it. And then who remembers them? Who can remember the name of the person who won the gold medal for the luge? Do you remember? Do you know? Nobody knows. They were famous for 15 minutes. A lot of work. So they didn't put. They were, you know. So we're gonna. No matter material life or spiritual life, you can't get anywhere unless you have put in tapasya. Tapasya. You can't. Nobody succeeds without tapasya. So you have to decide whether you're gonna put tapasya in for something which is temporary, or tapasya for something which is gonna have eternal benefit. Right. So you're gonna do all that hard work, and then at the end you lose it all. What's the good of it? What is the good? Like I just saw, it was a couple of days ago, some planning for the future. Some guy, he had after 30 million, he made a company planning for the future for investments, you know, how to invest, planning for the future. But then I was thinking, well, are they looking forward? What's going to happen for their next life? They're not planning that far ahead. They're only planning for retirement. What about planning for next life? Right? They're not going to... Nobody is at their funeral. They're taking, you know, all their money with them. Albert Einstein, in his next lifetime, he had to go to kindergarten again. He had to go back to school. He didn't, you know, like it wasn't all that knowledge just finished. All material things, they're all finished. So if we're going to do some work, might as well work at something which is eternal. Like if you go into a hotel. You're going to stay for 3 years in the hotel. Are you going to call in the interior decorator to, you know, spend thousands of dollars to paint the place and put in new carpeting? No, because you know you're only going to be there for a few days. Why do all that work? For something that is temporary. Because no matter, it's going to come to an end. It's going to come to an end. Because time... When you're 4 years old, I'm living in Canada. So when I was 4 years old, a year seemed like a very, very long time. Because then when the snow started coming, I seemed like, wow, that happened a long time ago. Because when you're 4 years old, 1 year is equal to 25% of your previous total experience. But when you're 40 years old, 1 year is only equal to 2.5% of your previous experience. And when you're 80 years old, it's 1 point, you know, that means it goes by faster and faster and faster. It just zooms right by. And if you're wasting your time by doing things that have temporary effect, then when you zoom to the end, what do you got? What's in your spiritual bank account? Nothing. You better start putting something into your spiritual bank account, because that end is going to come sooner or later. And it might not be that you live to be 80 years old. You might just, you know, you go out to go home, you might just get hit by a bus. Like that, you know. I was in a car accident in 2007. My life changed in 5 seconds. In 2009, I was driving across the United States, and there was a motorcyclist in front of me. It was a four-lane highway, and he was in the left lane, and we were going 75 miles an hour, and he just shifted, about 30 feet in front of me, shifted in front of me, and his back of his motorcycle started going like that. Smoke started coming out of the back wheel, and he started rolling like this on the highway at 75 miles an hour on a motorcycle. That took 3 seconds. In 3 seconds, his whole life changed. There's no guarantee what's going to happen to you. He wasn't expecting that. He wasn't planning for that day. He survived. I mean, when I left the scene of the, when the police came, he was still alive. But, barrel rolling across the highway at 75 miles an hour, that's not recommended for health. Not recommended. Your insurance company wouldn't recommend. Your doctor would not recommend doing like that.
Okay, now what we do? Hare Krishna, you have one more question?
My name is Santosh. My question is probably like people following the other religion like Christian or Islam perfectly, suppose they are following their religion perfectly, are they going to get the same destination or result as the devotee of Krishna we follow it to be? Or if not, then where they stand it to?
Well, a couple of things. Why? It's like, you know, if somebody else going to a different school, if they follow it, they get to graduate. What's the, you know, the school that you're in? perfect followers, like Srila Prabhupada was just being, he just met these two Mormon boys. These two, very nice, they were very nice, very sweet boys, Mormon, you know, Mormons? They're very polite in the Mormon religion. There's a certain time in their late teens, early 20s, they have to go for 2 years preaching, the young men. So they came to Srila Prabhupada in Australia, and they were very nice. So Srila Prabhupada said to them, I've yet to meet any Christians. So many people call themselves Christian, but none of them who's practicing Christianity. Who? They have so many slaughterhouses. You know, thou shalt not kill. So who is the Christian, you say? Yeah, if they follow perfectly, but who's following? They're not following their own religion. As a Bertrand Russell, famous British philosopher, mathematician, says, Christianity is a good idea if people would just do it. Nobody's doing it. They're not following their own religion. They become very watered down. Same thing with Islam. It's becoming, you know, Islam is like, there's like, first you have the Shias and the Sunnis, and then amongst them you have like some little splinter groups, and they hate each other, always killing each other, right? As soon as the Muslims, as soon as they kill all the kafirs, then they start killing each other. Isn't it? who's blowing up the mosques in Pakistan? Christians? Hindus? No, it's not the Muslims there. Sunnis are blowing up the Shia mosques, Shias are blowing up the Sunni mosques. So who's following? Who's following? In Hadith, supposedly Muhammad said that after 1,500 years of the Hijra, that that the Islam will go down the same rat hole as the Jews and the Christians. So it becomes the, you know, who's following. If they follow, then they'll get some benefit is there. Yeah, but they may not get to the, you know, it's the same level because of different philosophy. Even in Vaishnavism, different sampradayas, they have different goals. You know, like in the Sri Sampradaya, they want to go to Vaikuntha. They're not interested in Dwarka. They're not interested in Ayodhya. They're not interested in Goloka. They want to go to Vaikuntha. So they won't have the same destination as a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Because they have different destinations is there. So they have a... They want to go to Muslims. They want to go to a Swarga area type of thing where there's, you know, they'll have it's more of a heavenly planet. Where they'll have unlimited sexual things like that. But they can make some benefit, in depending upon them. There's all kinds. There's also different. In every religion, there's different. There's exoteric. There's the people who are very pedestrian, and then those who are following the more mystical side of it. Just like Aurangzeb's older brother, who he murdered to get the throne. Why did he murder him? What was the, of course, he murdered him to go on to get the power. But what was his excuse? He was having all the Upanishads translated into Urdu and Arabic. That they were reading these, they were reading these things. You know, so there's different levels of understanding in different spiritual traditions. But why be concerned what they're doing? We should be concerned with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Are you doing perfectly in your own? You know, and it also depends upon the who you know. Islam was created at a certain time and place to a certain audience. You know, same with like Christianity, at a certain time and place to a certain audience. You know, and they have very limited understanding because of who the audience was. Like Jesus may have had, you know, I have much more to tell you, but you cannot bear to hear it now. Yes. You know, he was preaching to fishermen and shepherds. You know, Krishna is speaking to a Rajarshi. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, he's already spoken more deep philosophy than is found in Christianity and in the Quran. You're not your body. You're not the body. You know, the whole this concept is, you know, and that's in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Because who's the audience? The audience is different. Does he have like a, you know, you're not going to have, you know, teach differential calculus to grade 2 student. They want to understand it. They're still learning, you know, addition and subtraction. Topic is the same. That's why it's a bahu janmanam, life after life. It's a gradual process of waking up. Those persons, they'll also, depending upon the sincerity, they will, you know, they're Muslims. It's like, you know, Hindu. Why are you a Hindu? Because your mother was a Hindu. It's a bodily designation. You came out of a Hindu mother, therefore you're a Hindu. They're Muslims because their mothers were Hindus, were Muslims. Like that. It's just a bodily designation. It becomes that way. But then they have, it becomes a social thing. It's a social thing. It's not. But when a person deeply inquires into who am I, what is, you know, like, and that becomes a different spiritual endeavor. That's different from the social designation of what my religion is. You know, they're Hindus in name only. They're Christians in name only. They're Muslims in name only. They're not really practicing. They don't understand why they do what they're doing. Like one of the last Christians, or some people say the last Christian died on the cross, but as a joke. But like, for example, St. Francis of Assisi. He was a very devout Christian. He was probably one of the last Christians. So, he was so God-conscious and so detached, he would go into a church, preach And the whole church congregation will just give up the material world? Give up completely the material world. And he didn't know what to do because he only was prepared for the men. And what are they going to do with the women and the children? He didn't know what to do with them. He was such a powerful preacher. He would preach to the birds. In fact, it was the Franciscans who helped the movement in Australia. The police were arresting the devotees. So the archbishop, who was a Franciscan, and he wrote a letter in a newspaper, "Stop harassing the servants of God." So the police stopped it. And they came and saw Srila Prabhupada. They were very friendly. Prabhupada went to the Franciscan monastery and gave several lectures there. So those who are real servants of God, they recognize each other. They don't recognize each other. They very much appreciate the Prabhupada. You can hear if you listened to the conversations, you can hear that whole series, the conversations when the bishop comes and meets Prabhupada. They're very friendly, both. And then he goes to the monastery and he's giving the lectures. And they at the end they say, "Oh, what do you think of Saint Francis?" And Prabhupada says, "Well, I don't know. Tell me about him. I never heard of him before." And then they explain how he saw everything. Brother, sun, sister, moon. He would speak to the birds like that. And then Prabhupada thought. Then he gave a whole lecture. He appreciated them more than they did. But he's a real devotee. He understands. That the self-realized soul sees the soul in the dog. The elephant, the dog eater, I've been on jet lag, and so he explained the whole thing, after Prabhupada's explanation, they had more appreciation for Saint Francis. There's a movie, a very beautiful movie, you may want to see. It's called Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon, on the life of Saint Francis of Assisi. It was done by Franco Zeffirelli. Now, Franco Zeffirelli was a very degraded Italian movie director. Very degraded. But he was in a car accident. And he came that close to dying. And he was in the hospital for months, hanging. His life was hanging. But then one night, he saw a vision of Saint Francis came to him, and Jesus. So he made the vow that if I live, I will make a movie in glorification of God. So he survived, and he kept that promise. And he made this movie, Brother, Sun, Sister, Moon. Totally in glorification of God, and won an Oscar award. So how I heard about this movie? One of my God brothers, he told me, he had blooped. And he happened to see this movie. It was so inspiring, he shaved up and joined the movement again. I'm seeing this movie. So the sincere servants of God will recognize each other. No matter which spiritual tradition that they're in. But then those who are on the bodily concept, they all hate each other. Even in their own tradition. Even in their own tradition, they'll hate each other because they're on the bodily concept. They'll be blowing up because they want numbers. They want numbers. They want because they want political power. They're not trying to leave the material world. They're trying to enjoy the material world. They lost the point. They lost the purpose of spiritual life is to leave the material world. They're trying to use it as a means of enjoying the material world. So then it's not spiritual life anymore. It just becomes a different method of exploiting material life. That's why you have the Protestants, right? Christianity of the Protestants, which is the mispronunciation of the word Protestant. They were protesting all the degradation, all the corruption in the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church had some of the Vatican had a brothel in it. Do you know that? The Vatican used to have brothels in the Vatican. One pope, they call him the Honest because he admitted all the bastard children that he had. There was one pope, Alexander VI, who had he was a pope, and he had at least three known children, two sons and a daughter. And him and his eldest son, he was Pope Alexander VI, Borgia, and his son, Cesar Borgia, they are the main... anybody ever read Machiavelli, the Prince? You ever heard this term, Machiavellianism? Machiavelli? Political, anyway, of complete cynical politics. Machiavellianism, you know, in political intrigue. This is the prince that they're the model after this pope. They used to say about the pope that particular pope that many people had boasted that they had been invited to lunch with the pope, but few people had boasted that they had lunch with the pope because he poisoned them. He murdered them. So many had boasted that they had gone. Had they had been invited to lunch, but very few could say that they had actually had lunch because they were dead. So the people, there's so much corruption, for your sins you just paid some money, and they would take the money, and all your sins are forgiven. Called indulgences. So the sincere Christians became very upset with this corruption, so they protested. That's where the word Protestants come from, because all kind of nonsense was going on. But they are sincere. Yeah. And then same thing, in India also. Not that only over there, you know. It's the same. It's because if you lose, casteism. Brahmins who just, Brahmins in name only. The Chanakya Pandit says the wooden horse, the wooden elephant, and the stuffed tiger, and the Brahmin with no education, they have only the name. Only the name. Because they're not practicing. Wooden elephant, paper, you know, stuffed tiger, and Brahmin with no knowledge. They only have the name. So you have to practice it.
Okay. You have this.
To check and believe in astrology? Because sometimes they're saying, if you believe in Krishna, so why are you checking astrology? Because what are you going to do?
Krishna had his horoscope done. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had his horoscope done. That's how I became interested in astrology. I was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, and there it was right there. His horoscope was done. Bhakti Siddhanta was an astrologer. Bhakti Vinod knew astrology. It's a material science. You don't need it to become a devotee. You don't need a house to become a devotee. You don't need a doctor. But it's useful. They're useful. If you're qualified, just like a doctor who doesn't know what he's doing will kill you. So they have to know. You have to get qualified persons to do it. You know. So it's a useful. It's a useful science. Kala Vidya. Science of time. It's like if you wanted to go plan some event, you might want to check to see what the weather is like, right? Before you have a plan to go out on a picnic or some function. You're going to go when it's going to be a hurricane. You know, you're not going to change. So it's a timing. It's useful. Srila Prabhupada had his horoscope then. Several times. It's a useful thing, but it's not necessary. You don't need it. It's like you don't need doctors. You don't need clothes because we're not the body. You don't need any of these. You don't need anything material to become a devotee, to become Krishna conscious. But we tend, because we're living in a material world, we find that some things can be useful, like going to a doctor if he's qualified. He's a qualified doctor, not a quack.
So,
you know?
Sorry, I always have this problem, you know, because.
Okay, I'll give you an example of how astrology can be useful. There's a verse in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Matva sparshas tu kanteya sitoshna sukha dukkada agamapino nityas tamtitikshrishva bharata. That the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and its disappearance in due course of time like the appearance and disappearance of the summer and winter season. They arise due to sense perception, of sayana bharata. One must learn how to tolerate them and not be disturbed. But sometimes a person, a devotee, anybody, they may be going through some difficult time. And they become very disturbed about it. They can become very depressed. But if you know, it's not going to last forever. It will end. That's our philosophy. But so astrology can also, this is, so if you just know it philosophically, then you'll know it'll pass. But the astrology will tell you when it'll pass. And it helps you to have more patience. It's just like you know that it's cold now, right? But you know in about 6 weeks it'll become warm. So you tolerate the cold. Or like in India now, it's 38 degrees. we're waiting for monsoon. Well, you know the monsoon is going to come, so we can tolerate it. But we didn't know if the monsoon is going to come, then it would be a lot harder. But we know monsoon is going to come. So we tolerate it. We're not so disturbed. And we enjoy mangoes. It's the only good thing about the summer is mango season. But you tolerate it. It helps you to tolerate, because it helps you to implement astrology. Vedic astrology is a symbolic representation of Vedanta philosophy. Symbolic representation of the Vedanta, of the whole. It's a symbolic representation of the whole Vedic worldview. That's what it is. That means somebody to become expert in it, they have to know the Vedic worldview, not just that they read a book. Otherwise, you won't understand it. Everything in Vedic astrology, every symbol, has a very deep philosophical meaning, from which, it was like the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses, is derived, expanded from the four verses in the second chapter of the second canto, the Chaturshloki. From those four verses, the other 18,000 are generated from. So each thing in Vedic astrology, every sign, every house, every planet, has got a bija meaning. And you can, whole books have been written on one planet, on each sign, each house, whole books. But from that seed meaning. So it requires, after almost 40 years of studying it, I'm starting to get an understanding of how it works. So it can be useful. But it's not necessary.
Okay.
Does that answer your question? If it didn't, you can...
Okay, now I can stop here.
All right then. What time is it?
So time is 4:40.
Okay.
Now we have some something here, some Mayapur. This is not Lakshmi's ornament, and this is going to govern the cycle. You can some blessings for them.
Say again now. These are from my prasadam.
Ornament of prasadam.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is for the Guntur Gaudutai clothes. So you can get the blessings for all the devotees.
Okay. Please. I'm supposed to touch it to their head?
Yes.
Okay.
Take this Narsingadev Mahaprasad and the Gaudutai.
Oh, this is from Mahaprasad? From Narsingadev?
Yes.
This also?
Stan Narsingadev, Mayapur.
Okay. Okay. So what am I doing? I'm going to put that in people's head. You can give me a copy of this, right?
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay, sorry. I remember you now from Soho Street. I gave that class.
Thank you.
This is next.
Please come all quickly. Thank you. We have prasadam now. After prasadam, we have small kirtan. Then we can take a leave.